Author, researcher, and lecturer Lloyd Pye has over 30 years of experience writing and speaking about the origins of life, human origins, hominoids, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, and others, and the work of Zachariah Sitchin as well. Lloyd is also the caretaker of the very famous Starchild skull and believes that it could make history as big as history can be made. Here he is for a couple hours tonight on Coast to Coast, Lloyd Pye. Lloyd, how are you?
I'm good, George. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I know lots going on with this project that you have been working on now for how many years, Lloyd?
I'm in my 11th year, George, middle of my 11th year.
My God, it's almost been, career-wise, it's almost been your life, hasn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. I started 1 year after I got into this and been with it ever since. And the irony is, when I first started, I thought it would be 6 months max. That's what I told Ray and Melanie, the owners. I said, oh, when scientists get a load of how strange this is and how potentially important, they'll jump all over it like two-ton ticks, you know, and we'll just be able to step aside and turn it over to them. And it's just been a war ever since for attention.
What drives you here, Lloyd?
Well, just basically now, I know we're right. I know what we have. I know we have the smoking gun, the thing that everybody looks for is the smoking gun of proof of UFO or alien reality, and we have it. It's just a matter now of confirming what we already know, what we proved actually back as far back as 2003, if you can believe that. We had a DNA test that showed us what we had, but in order to prove it, you have, you know, science holds you to that standard of extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. So they won't just accept ordinary proof for this, which I believe we had in 2003. We have to make it so compelling, so overwhelming that they just have no room to squawk. I mean, no room to complain at all. And we're just very, very lucky that DNA can do that, because DNA is, you know, as you know, the biology of math, or the math of biology, however you want to look at it. It's so precise, and it's so dependable, and it's so repeatable. It has all the things that science requires, which is why it's so powerful in a court of law.
Lloyd, for the benefit of brand-new listeners, tell me about the Starchild skull, where it was found, when it was found, and what everybody believes it to be, including you.
Right. Well, it was found in about 1930 in Mexico, about 100 miles southwest of Chihuahua. A young girl was down there, and she was visiting relatives, and she wandered off from a village and went into a mine tunnel pretty far from the village, but fairly isolated place. And in that mine tunnel, she found two skeletons, what turned out to be a human one lying on its back on the dirt of the mine tunnel, and then beside it was mounded up what looked like a grave, and she noticed coming out of that grave was what she called a misshapen bony hand, and that hand was wrapped around the upper arm bone of the skeleton lying on the dirt. She didn't know at the time, didn't understand, but what that meant was somebody had buried a body in the grave and then laid down beside it, left the hand out, wrapped the hand around their own arm, and killed themselves. So it was a very dramatic scene. She ended up trying to recover both full skeletons, but got the two skulls damaged somewhat back into the States. And she just assumed, as anybody would in 1930, that it was a deformed human of some kind, and she kept them as souvenirs. In the 90s, when she was dying, they ended up falling into the hands of Ray and Melanie Young of El Paso, and Melanie was a neonatal nurse, and everybody up to then had assumed that the weird-looking skull was some kind of deformity, but Melanie, being a neonatal nurse, knew that wasn't true. It was much too light. It was much too symmetrical. It didn't look at all like a human. All of its parts were different and rearranged, and she could tell something was really unusual about it. But also, she and her husband, Ray, were members of MUFON in El Paso, and so they knew that it looked like it could fit inside the head of a gray alien, and that's what they believed that it very well might be, the skull of a gray alien. So they asked me if I would take it around to scientists and find out, and I said, sure, I think you're right. I think it's very unusual. I do believe, though, and at the time I did believe, that it had to be a deformity as well. It's the thing you naturally assume. But over time, as I began to collect evidence and pile it up, I mean really pile it up, it began, every piece that I got, every bit of new information indicated more and more that it wasn't human. It really wasn't human. But it came down in the end to getting physiological differences, not genetic differences. And one scientist finally told me in exasperation, he says, "I don't care if you stack up 10,000 of these physiological differences, Lloyd, I'm still going to tell you that Mother Nature can do that. Nature, we believe as scientists that nature is capable of absolutely anything. You're not going to impress me till you produce DNA evidence." And so that's what we went after.
And you've been doing that for some time with mixed results, I guess, right?
Well, at first, sure, there was a lot of confusion and there were mistakes. There was an initial DNA test by people that weren't really capable of doing it that led to a wrong result that cost some years of people not being interested in it. And not until we got a second DNA test to show that the first one had been wrong, you know, did people get reinterested in it again. But the first test was just a mistake. We couldn't get anybody in 1999. There were six labs that could do the DNA testing that we needed, which is for ancient DNA, which is older than 50 years. The star child is 900 years old. So those six labs, none of them would touch the star child because it had alien overtones, and they would laugh me out of the place. They just, "No, you must be kidding. We wouldn't do that." Well, 3 years later, there were 24 labs doing it, and one of them said, "You know, we'll do it for you." And ultimately, when they did, that's when we knew what we had.
Lloyd, are there some out there who want to stop you, trying to prevent you from getting to the truth about this skull?
You know, George, I didn't for a long time believe that there were. I mean, because here I am, 10 and a half years later, and I've not had any real resistance to speak up. People always ask me that. Well, how are they letting you go? How are they letting you do it? And I would say, I don't really know. I'm inoculated in some way. I don't know why. Well, looking back on it, they knew in 1999 when I started that it was absolutely impossible for me to prove that the star child was not entirely human. There was no way to prove it because all we had at that time in terms of DNA was primer-based technology, which would never have allowed the absolute proof that science requires. Only since 2006, with the invention of the 454 life sciences technology where they recover every base pair, only since then have we had the capacity to prove it to that degree, that extraordinary degree that science demands. So since then, since we've had the ability, they still didn't need to worry about me because the price was so prohibitive. It was millions of dollars in 2 or 3 years to run a test, which is what the Neanderthal is closing in on the end of that now. But now, as you and I are talking, now it's all within my reach. It's all within reach. The test costs less than around $200,000, and then you have to have it read, the evidence read by experts. So maximum $250,000 for the whole deal, and 3 to 4 months instead of 2 to 3 years. So now I'm a threat. Now this can happen. Now I can do what I've been saying all along.
Now you're the real deal, Lloyd.
Now it's the real deal, exactly. So now I believe things are beginning to work against me. That's my sense of that, and we can go over some of that if you want to.
And did you sense this a few years ago?
No, I didn't. I've been given a free pass on this because it was so unlikely that I could do it, that I could prove it. I knew it. The evidence is there. The evidence is clear. When you see it stacked up like I've stacked it up in the places where it's available, anybody that takes the time to familiarize themselves with where we stand with this thing, they're just blown away, and with good reason. It is really overwhelming. But still, without that definitive DNA testing, without the definitive DNA result, I really was helpless and hopeless. But now that it's within reach, just recently, within the last year, I would say, do I feel I'm getting squeezed?
Lloyd, when you touch this skull, what's it like, given the possibilities that it could be extraterrestrial, could be, what's it like? How do you feel?
You know, I don't really feel anything. I held the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull, and I really felt as much awe holding that as I do the Star Child. Yeah. I've been around it so much.
But this was from a living creature. You know, the crystal skull is the crystal skull, right, and I understand that. But this was from an actual living creature.
Right, exactly. When I first got it, I would keep it on a coffee table in front of me where I was, you know, in my apartment, and I would just look at it, and I would try to think, what on earth was your life like? Who were you? You know, that those things that you do. But after a while, I dealt with it so much, that sort of went away. But everybody that's new to it, that holds it, they feel very powerful things from it, and people tell me, the ones who are really sensitive, you know, intuitives and things like that, they come up with all kinds of stories about what they feel that was going on in its life and how it might have died and all that. But I hear different stories every time with people like that, so I can't really say that there's any cluster where people, three or four or five of them, all say that. In fact, one time in your town in St. Louis, about a dozen top-notch psychics got together to try to see if we could get any kind of consensus, and unfortunately we couldn't. But a guy named Joseph Palermo, you may know him, put that together, and it was a very interesting effort, but it just didn't amount to anything.
Give me your website, Lloyd.
The Star Child Project is www.starchildproject, all one word, starchildproject.com, and there you'll find all kinds of information about the Star Child, as well as a link to the new ebook that I've put out about
it. Let's talk about that ebook, Lloyd, okay, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie in the cave in St. Louis. Here's Lloyd Pye back with us. Lloyd, you're putting out an ebook, but you're doing it more of a defensive weapon, aren't you?
Absolutely. I have thought for most of the last year that things were going to fall into place time and again for both the testing and the documentary film that we need to shoot while the testing is going on. In other words, you can't just run this DNA test on the Star Child and expect any scientist to accept the result. The first reaction they would give would be, oh, well, if you found that it's an alien, then you have to be wrong. You have to have done something stupid. You couldn't have that answer because we don't accept that. So we have to film every significant step of that process just so we have a visual record that, no, we didn't do anything wrong. It's part of, you know, nailing it down tight so there can be no argument about it. So I kept friends who people who were working to set the documentary up. We had the deal done about a year ago. You might remember I came on the show and I said,
I remember that.
Yeah, I got it from the BBC and in England, and then we went through a series of others. But what would happen is, you know, starting with the BBC, they would say, oh, the economy, it's just too much. We're having to fire people. We can't afford this. But really, it's ridiculous. These are multi-billion-dollar television networks, and I'm not just, you know, the BBC, the Discovery Channel here in the States, a big channel in France, a big channel in Germany. These were big deals, and every time people would get excited about it, it would sound like it was going to go through, and then suddenly, oh, no, it's too expensive, but I was blaming it on the economy. Even though they seemed awful big to be concerned about a $250,000, $500,000 investment, nonetheless, you know, I accepted it. But then we, in June of this year, when I was in England doing some speaking in Europe about it, we were going to get a story in the Daily Mail, the England's biggest paper at 3 million copies a day, 6 million readers, and we had that locked in, we thought. And it was going to be June 24th, no doubt, so that they could cover me for two of my lectures. Everything was going great. The guy turns it in, and the people at the Daily Mail can see what And when I say the guy, Danny Penman, I have a link to the story. But Danny Penman is a PhD biochemist. They said, yeah, we'll get a guy that really knows his science, and he'll be able to pick this thing apart if it's a problem. He sent in what turned out to be a very positive piece, and boom, they spiked it. They didn't put it out. So somebody, somewhere, it stopped it somehow, some way. And then I knew. Then I realized, oh, we're getting, you know, something's really working against this thing. So about 2 weekends ago, I published an article, an essay, on a site in England called Mania. 35,000 people hit that site explaining this story about the Daily Mail that I'm telling you. And then after that, I began to let it be known that you and I had agreed I was going to be on the show and I could talk about this, that I was going to be on Coast to Coast.
Yep.
Well, lo and behold, here before the show, guess what? It's up. They released it, and it's on a website in England called News Monster. And I have the links to that on your website so people can go and, you know, go and see and link to it. Now, also on my website, I have to say this, Dr. Penman made a few small errors of fact in the article that I have corrected on my website, and people can go see that if they want to on the Star Child website. But overall, it's a very powerful and very positive story in our favor, and you can see why somebody wouldn't want that to go out to 6 million people in England or all over the world on the internet. So while it's on the internet, it isn't going to reach those millions, so we're not in as good a shape as we could be. But at least we have you as sort of a buffer to absorb some of the disappointment and some of the letdown of not getting it on the Daily Mail itself. So to that extent, we're in good shape. The other part of this is people say, well, what are you going to do now that it's really, you know, it's really turning into a war and kind of an open war, even though it's kind of undercover? I had no choice. I created an ebook. Now, I boiled down everything I know in my 10.5 years with the Star Child into this new ebook. 125 illustrations with little text boxes beside each illustration to explain what it is. For anybody that wants to familiarize themselves with facts, there is no better way to do it and no quicker way to do it and no easier way to do it. This is like the Cliff Notes of the Star Child. And what I need is for as many people as possible to get this thing, make themselves familiar with it, with the facts, so that they can be the smartest person in the room anywhere they are when the conversation turns to UFOs and aliens. You will be the smartest person in the room if you've got this much, because you will have ammunition out the wazoo to talk about it. And in doing that, all we can do is hope that one of the people who do this talk to somebody with deep enough pockets to provide the money to do the testing that we need. And I mean, it's not a gift either. It's an investment. You're the person who does it, whoever does it, they're buying into the most important film in the world for 2 or 3 years. I mean, we get the result that we're going to get. Whoever's put up the money for that, they own a piece of that film, and a big piece of that film, and that film will be a huge theater success, television success, whatever. So it isn't like we're not asking for charity here. We're asking for somebody to invest in this thing, and let's get it over with. Man, that's what I want. It's been 10.5 years. I'm sick of it. I just want it over with, but I also want it to be the correct answer, whatever that correct answer is. I've said all along, if it turns out to be a deformity, I'll be able to walk away from it and resume my life with everything you know is wrong in my intervention theory work and hominoids and all that. So it's not the end of my life if it doesn't happen. But if it does happen,
you can't walk away, because it just begins then.
Well, you know, a part of it does, George, but it'll never be as intense for me as these years have been trying to be heard. That part will be over. I mean, where then it goes is everybody else has to learn to deal with the new reality that I've been dealing with for a very long time. So I'm way ahead of the curve with everybody else, and it'll take them a while to catch up with where I am. But I really see this as just the most positive thing imaginable, because we've talked about this before on the show. We cannot possibly chart an accurate path path into our future as a species if we don't know where we came from, how we got here, where, what our role is in the larger picture. As long as we think we're just it, and no matter what we decide to do, nobody's going to hold us accountable. As long as we think that, we're going to keep plundering the way we do. But when those, you know, you were talking about in the ad earlier, those who are in charge want to maybe decimate the population. Mm-hmm. There are people who feel like they're running the show. If they're not necessarily running the show, if there's somebody out there they may have to answer to, they may think twice about the things that they're doing. I just think that changing our worldview at that level where no one can deny any longer that we're just a small part of the picture, I think that's going to make a very big difference in how we view ourselves and how we view the future. And that's really what I'm working toward, a change pointing us in a different direction toward the future. Because if we don't do that, you and I know perfectly well we're doomed at the rate we're going, at the pace we're going.
A couple of weeks ago, I had UFO investigator Jaime Masson on, and he was talking about this new creature that they have found,
right,
that an individual found snared in a trap. This creature was eating its arm off to escape. That's how bizarre it is. And then the guy drowned the thing. And to me, this looks like a little spider monkey, but I was comparing this to your star child. And yours truly looks extraterrestrial. You know, whether it was a stretched head or a deformity, yours looks extraterrestrial. Jaime Masson's creature looks like it just could be the skeleton of a monkey.
That really, in looking at it, it very much looks like that. And also, you know, there was all that burst of publicity about it, and that's what I don't really understand. There are these tremendous bursts of publicity around every new thing like that, and then there's no follow-up. I haven't heard anything. I don't know if you've heard anything, but I haven't heard anything since that first big burst. They said they had been doing medical tests for 2 years or a year or something like that. Well, I know how it works because of the Star Child. We've had lots of medical and scientific tests done on it, and there should be answers all over the place. There should be a website, should be all this. I can't find anything like that. So you have to wonder about that. You really do. I do, anyway.
We're going to take calls.
With that Panama thing that was found just a few days ago.
Yeah. See, that to me could be one of those hairless sloths, I think. It
right.
looks like one of those.
Well, you know, the kids said that they stoned it to death, but if you looked at its skin, it didn't have any.
There's no bruises or any punctures.
Exactly,
no.
Exactly. So I question that one, too. And again, it's like it's so easy to run tests on these things and to make those tests available and put your evidence out there and let it stand. And, you know, we've been doing that for 10.5 years now, and we still haven't had anybody throw anything at us that knocked us off the catbird seat. I mean, we've stayed in position as the thing that we've been saying for a very long time, which is this is it. This is the thing that is going to prove it, that can prove it, that has all the tools needed. All people need to do is make themselves fully aware of it so that they understand the facts. And when you understand the facts of the Star Child, you will not have any doubt that it's what I keep saying it is, which is the smoking gun of this field. It really is.
We're going to take calls with you next hour. And also, I would like our listeners to talk with you about your passion of human origins as well. You, like Michael Cremo, have investigated, you know, ancient civilizations and origins. And what is your take on what people are beginning to think, some, that we go way, way back, Lloyd?
Well, there's two ways of going at that. Does civilization go way, way back? Absolutely. Absolutely. The evidence, Michael's got evidence just running out of his ears of that. Do human beings go back that far? This is where Michael and I part company. We're good friends, but you know, we understand this between us. He goes with the Hindu and other versions that it goes back for millions of years, humans do, but I stick with the genetics because it's something I understand. And the genetics say we don't go back any further than about 200,000 years. So we, you and I, as we are today, we only go back about 200,000 years. Was anybody living on this planet 6 million years ago? Very possible, but they weren't us. they were something like us, but they were not us. They're probably what we descended from in a genetic lab somewhere. Maybe perhaps we were made in their likeness, a la the Bible and like that. But whoever was here, it wasn't us, but somebody was here. We genetically just simply don't exist until about 200,000 years ago. And ironically enough, that's what Sitchin and the Sumerians seem to be saying in their writings, that it was all done at about that time. So I think that's very, very ironic that, you know, 4,000, 5,000 years ago, you have writings on clay tablets saying about 200,000 years ago was the time that the Adamu were created. And then lo and behold, in 1987, our geneticists prove it, you know, with the mitochondrial Eve theory. So the evidence for me is quite strong in that sense. But I do believe Michael's evidence of habitation well into the deep past is also accurate.
I had an opportunity to chat again with Zechariah Sitchin a few months ago. It may very well be my last interview with him, Lloyd. He's up in age, and he can't stay up late.
Right.
Well, you've looked at his work, which I find fascinating. What do you think?
I went on his first three tours of his 16 or 17 that he took around the world to different sites. I was on the first three, and I got to know him very well as a friend and to have tremendous respect for his research. And this is what I say about Sitchin. He may not be right in every single thing that he says because he works alone. He is the most lone wolf of the lone wolves. He's done that whole incredible mountain of research on his own. And so one person, they can make mistakes, but I will guarantee you that when the history of this whole thing is written, he will be so much more correct than any mainstream scientist going today. That everything, you know, like my book title is Everything You Know Is Wrong. Everything we think we know right now about the big issues of science and all, I think we're as wrong today as the flat earthers were, as the earth is the center of the universe were 200-300 years ago. We're just that wrong to the people of 200-300 years in the future. But I think Sitchin is closer to the truth than anybody in the mainstream that we have today.
What an incredible theory, isn't it?
Absolutely, but he's got a lot of facts on his side, and if you look at our genes, if you look inside our genes, if you look at the fusion of our second and third chromosomes, if you look at a number of points, everything that the Sumerians, that Sitchin says the Sumerians were saying, the evidence, the tracks, the fingerprints seem to be in our gene pool.
If you interpret Genesis and put Sitchin's theory into it, it makes sense, doesn't it?
It sure does. In fact, it looks like Genesis was a retelling of the you know, written in stone. That was the benchmark back then, written in stone, because that was the writings of the Sumerians in stone. And I think it was that somebody at the time of the Bible just looked at that story and said, okay, how can we boil this down into a tight little package? And I think that's what they did, editing. You know, you do books. You know the deal. Editing.
Oh, yeah, just absolutely.
It's just a result of editing.
If and when you finally get the final results on the Star Child skull, if then it is proven to be, let's say, a deformity, what does Lloyd Pye then do?
I go right back to my work in Human Origins that we're talking about, Everything You Know Is Wrong, intervention theory. I love all that. Really, to tell you the truth.
Well, you're very good at that.
I was never a UFO guy before the Star Child came into my life, and I'll be very happy to slip back into that role. But I have to tell you right now, the truth of it is there's no longer an if on this. There's just a when. It's going to happen. Even if something were to just really bad happen to me, there's enough. We've taken enough precaution to put pieces out there. Somebody will step in my place. But I don't think that's going to happen. We are going to get it done. The deep pockets are going to come forward. Somebody's going to read the ebook and tell it to a friend. We'll tell it to a friend who's connected to the right person. Somebody will get in touch with me. We'll get it underway. It's going to happen. And I guarantee you, I guarantee everybody, it's going to come out our way, because we already know from the primer DNA testing what the answer is going to be. We can't say it definitively. definitively enough. We know the father of the star child is not a human. What we couldn't say in 203 is how far away he was on a percentage basis from human. The new test from 454 Life Sciences will give us that. It will give us the exact percentage that the father and the star child were away from normal humans.
Let's have some fun and take some phone calls with you, Lloyd, when we come right back. A full hour of calls with Lloyd Pye on Coast to Coast AM. Lloyd, have you ever been approached by the old black ops folks or the men in black or people like that who want you to stop doing this project?
No, I never have. Nobody has said anything to me outwardly, never in the whole time. And that's one of the more amazing things of this whole story is why they let me go when they did. And looking back on it at the time, there's no explanation for it then. But now looking back, I know what it is, I think. They knew if they sat around a table or whatever, they said, there's no way this guy can ever prove this. And in 1999, when I started, there wasn't. There was nothing on the horizon. And again, not until 2006, 7 years later, was that ability within my reach, but it was still a glimmer because I couldn't pay for it. Now, this year, 2009, basically 10 years later, where they couldn't possibly have foreseen, now the ability to do it is there, and now I'm sure they're regretting that they didn't, but at the time they probably made the right decision because they couldn't. Why bother? I mean, why bother a guy who can't possibly prove it? And I almost got knocked out of the ring, with that bad test
sure.
At the end of 99. So that cost me 3 years right there. So, I think they made a right decision and a good decision based on the trouble that it would have taken to take me out. Because, the first week I had it, instead of trying to hide it, I took it right to the UFO Congress in Laughlin and I announced it to 500 people. You may have been there. I don't remember, but I let people know immediately, I've got this thing. If anything happens to me, you know who did it. I think I might have inoculated myself with that move right there. Probably the smartest thing I did. And then they decided, we could take out one guy if he was just hiding it, but we can't take out 500 people who know about it now. So let's just let him go because he can't prove it. And now here I am 10 years later, and I can prove it. All I need is a little help from your listeners out there, and I'm sure I'm going to get it.
Lloyd, time is money, and over these 10 years, if time indeed is money, how much do you think this has cost you?
I've gone bankrupt. I've lost, I would imagine, probably $150,000 that I've made and lost, and then that's not counting the money that people have given me to help me along the way, donations and things like that. I mean, that's how I keep going. If it wasn't for people helping out and buying my books and doing the things that people in this field have to do to make a living to keep going. But, I've lived very poor. But it's pretty much this. This is what I tell people. I've had to take a vow of poverty to do this.
Sure. That's basically you're not extravagant.
You because if you do anything at all, if you raise your profile at all financially, the critics jump down your throat and say, oh, you're just in it for the money. You can't trust anything he says. He's just in it for the money. You've heard that before. Everybody in our field, as soon as we try to make any money, that's what they say. Oh, well, you can't believe anything he says. He's in it for the money. So I've had to be especially careful because of the importance of the star child and because of the importance of not having my opinions about it tainted by people saying, oh, he's just in it for the money. And yet you hear that about me all the time on the internet. It's one of the things that the critics use, but it's not true. And I've got a real record of living a very low to the ground lifestyle that anybody can check out and see for themselves.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Washington, state of Bob. You are up with us, west of the Rockies. Hey, Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, before I get to my question, I wanted to announce to you guys that James Fox, his movie is scheduled to appear on the History Channel. It's called I Know What I Saw.
Yes.
I'm trying to get everything done by October 4th on the History Channel. But when I emailed him, apparently he's editing like crazy trying to meet this deadline. So if there's anybody that can help him, that would be great. But there's a good UFO documentary that would be on mainstream TV.
Oh, it's going to be great. Yeah, he's in touch with
producer
Tom.
The question I have for you is, in his other movie called 50 Years of Denial, there was a portion where Bob Dean was standing over this picture. and it was the only time this picture's ever been seen. Now, the story behind this picture is that the Coyomi crash of in Mexico, Roswell, near Chihuahua, where the Star Child was found, the story behind it is that allegedly this was given to Bob Dean at a conference by somebody who was in the Mexican military police at the time of the crash. And it's known on the Internet as the three-second even. Have you seen this photograph? Have you done any comparisons with this? It's a photograph of one of the EBEs from the Mexican Roswell crash. Have you seen this photograph? And have you done any comparisons to it?
Is that directed at me?
Yes,
yeah.
Lloyd.
Yeah. To tell you the truth, I have seen so many photographs, I can't pull that one out of my memory bank as the one because I get so many of them. I probably have, to be honest. I probably have, but I just can't distinguish it in my mind. I have seen, the Amoco ad. that one pops into mind.
The bruising on it with the twisted neck and the bruising.
And it had an elongated head as well, didn't it, Bob?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
that's my question.
The Star Child doesn't really have an elongated head. That's more like the cone heads down in Peru. The Star Child's head is its parietals are expanded, but it isn't. They're not reshaped because the bone does have the normal subtle convolutions that skulls have. Whereas when you shape them, those things are removed in the shaping process. So it's clear that the Star Child's head grew the way that it grew. And it's not elongated in back. It just has expanded parietals.
Is the skull under lock and key?
Yes, yes. The owners, Ray and Melanie, take care of that. What I keep is the copy. We've tried to be pretty smart about this so that if we're going to be taken out, several of us have to be taken out, and that makes it, harder for those who might consider doing that. But Ray and Melanie keep the originals, both skulls, both originals, with them. I keep just copies with me so that as I take around and talk and lecture, that's what I have. So, yes, they are very well protected. Everybody understands that we get the result that we anticipate. Those are going to be two of them. Well, certainly the Star Child will be the most important relic in the world for a while, at least, if not, forever.
Lloyd, do you carry your copy of the skull onto a plane?
Yes, the copies go. I get stopped, as you can imagine, pretty regularly. But I know they look at what in the hell is this?
Now, you don't check it, do you? You carry it on with you, right?
Yeah, I have to carry it on. Absolutely, it could get damaged any other way. So it's got to go through the machines, and I got to stand there and explain to them that no, it's a copy, and it's stereolithographic, and it's made up with fine layers of powder and glue, so you can see. It's almost like remember the old record tracks on a standard turntable record.
Yeah.
You see those, and so you hold it up to the light in certain ways, and both of the skulls, you can see them. And as soon as they see that, then they all always let it go through. But, yeah, it jolts them every time. And it was really funny when I was on the History Channel a couple years ago, and I let them take them for a couple of trips because they were going to get a model made of it and all that. And they said the same thing. They sent me pictures of the scanners taking shots with it and, having fun with it.
The transportation security folks must go nuts when they see this.
Yeah, with the Star Child, exactly, yeah.
Let's go Tallahassee, Florida, east of the Rockies. Hey, Dale, go ahead.
Yes, how you guys doing?
Good, Dale, thanks.
Yes, I wanted to make a point. It's mentioned in the Holy Bible, the Christian Bible, that these beings came here and mentions, and there was gold in Genesis 2:11. And the gold of that land is good, and there's bilinium and onyx stone. In my research, bilinium is a source of resin. Again, these advanced beings, whether you call them Elohim, Anunnaki, or gods, the story of Zechariah Sitchin, that they needed gold in massive amount of quantities to create their biosphere, and plus the city, the holy city that's composed of precious and semi-precious stones, they had to mine them, and earth wasn't vibrating, so they had to build. They built pyramids. I'm sure you guys know of the Seti I temple, where there's evidence of helicopters, submarines, transport vehicles, and that land glider that we see on Star Wars.
Yep.
Those
yep.
things are of the jet pillar or this battery that is holding it up or giving it power.
Well, there's no question, Dale, that in my mind, at least, we had ancient technology that was pretty good technology. How old, Lloyd, is the Star Child skull? Not in terms of years, but when it was a live child.
Well, first of all, it wasn't a child. We assumed that it was in the beginning, and the first X-rays indicated that it was a child, because along with the skull, you have a piece of upper right maxilla, which is the front of your mouth, top right of the top part of your mouth. And in that, there were two teeth down, and clear evidence that three other teeth had been there and had been knocked out in the tumble down the flash flood in the stream no need to go into, but that's what happened. But also in the top bone of it, there are teeth impacted, meaning it looked like what you get with a child 5 or 6 years old, where they have teeth down and teeth ready to come down. So the first analysis of it was that it's a child, so we called it the Star Child. Later we found out that the two teeth that were down had really big, strong, massive roots, and the teeth of children don't have roots like that. And as the teeth are getting ready to fall out, the roots absorb back in so that the teeth can fall out fairly easily. So this was not a child. This was a well-grown adult. The question, though, is if it's got teeth down that are pretty heavily worn and it's got teeth up in its bone to come down, is it a being that lives for hundreds or maybe thousands of years and it can just replace its teeth like sharks? So the age of the Star Child when it died could be anywhere from, 20 to 500 or 1,000 or who knows what, but it certainly wasn't a child.
Let's go to Carefree Arizona. Bruce on the wild card line. Bruce, good morning.
Hi. I'm nervous here. Thanks a lot for letting me on. Hey,
of course.
I want to throw out a wild theory here and see if what either one of you think of it. What do you think of the possibility that Sitchin was right, but that the Anunnaki never left, and that they became the royal families or the power behind the royal families of Europe, and today they're behind the New World Order or some of the other secret governments?
Well, you could be partly right on that. David Icke thinks that the reptilian end of extraterrestrials are what became the royal family and what have you. Lloyd, you ever look at that?
Well, yeah, obviously I get asked that question a lot. I think in terms of the Anunnaki, they were, according to the writings, they were supposed to have a physical glow about themselves that human beings could see, and that's where the idea of angels came from, that the angels of the Lord had a halo around them, an aura that you could see, a different energy about them. So if they were alive today, and I don't think they could move among us without being easily recognized, so I don't think that the true Anunnaki would move around among us. They may live, underground, on the dark side of the moon, underwater. I mean, you get a lot of theories about where people could live, and you can't rule any of that out. But as far as David and the reptilians, it's just another whole wing of a theory that, I don't really subscribe to, but I don't really research it.
What did your family say about this passion you have about this?
Well, my family and friends are supportive, but they don't really get it, I don't think, in large part just because it's for where I'm from the deep south. This is, pretty far off the deep end. But they're very tolerant, and they certainly all respect that I work very hard at what I do, and I've sacrificed an awful lot to get here with it. And I believe now that they're really coming to think that, he's not a stupid guy, and he wouldn't have put 10 years into it if he was just, wasting his time. He wouldn't do that. And I'm hearing that more and more from him. So, and I think those of you that have been hearing this, for a long time, this I've always said, well, here's where we are, but we're not quite there yet. We're there now. We have everything we need. We've got the test that's available for us to get. We have the DNA in hand. We have the new ebook that explains everything that needs to be done, why it has to be done, what the facts are. We've got everything we need. It's just a matter of getting people to act, getting people motivated to help, to get involved. And it's a big stone. We have to push it up a hill, but we don't have far to push. We're almost there.
Almost. Hollywood, California. Hello, Sharon. I just left there. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
First of all, I came in a little late. I'm assuming this thing is no longer alive.
It is no longer alive. It's just a skull.
So how long was it held before it died?
How long was it what? Oh, no, it was dead 900 years ago. It was found about 1930. But when the carbon-14 dating of it took place, it and the skull that was found with them, they were both dated independently, different labs, different times, and the result both times came back 900 years plus or minus 40 years, which was an amazing synchronicity for carbon-14. So it tells us that, number one, the DNA is very fresh, and that's one of the arguments. Let me make that point because it's really important that people understand. One of the concerns about DNA that old, 900 years old, is that it will be degraded in some way and therefore won't give a good DNA result. But in 203, what we found was that, and we assumed it, by the way, that if you're buried in a mine tunnel for 900 years, you might as well be in a climate-controlled storage locker.
Sure.
You know, it's just perfect conditions for preservation of DNA in bone. So that when the human was analyzed in 203 using the primers, on the first attempt of the mitochondrial DNA of the human, it came right up bright and clear in the gel sheets. On the first attempt of the nuclear DNA, it came up bright and clear in the gel sheets. For the star child, on the first attempt of the mitochondrial DNA, bright and clear on the gel sheets. But then on the nuclear DNA for the star child, which were, as you know, the mitochondrial is the mother, so we know the star child's mother is human, clear as a bell. But when it came time to get the mother and the father in the nuclear DNA, boom, suddenly no reaction from the primers. And for six full tests, no reaction. Now, what does that tell you? Well, you know the DNA's there. You know it's, you know, basically fresh. You know it's easy to recover. It's not degraded. And mom, you know, is human, and suddenly they're not recovered for with human-only primers. It can only mean dad is not human. Now, what science says, when I tried to say that, they said, but the possibility exists, even though there's no evidence to back it up. The possibility exists that it might be somehow degraded in some weird, bizarre way so that you can recover the mitochondrial DNA but not recover the nuclear DNA. And it's one of those wink, wink, nudge, nudge things where science gets to lord it over us because they still have that sliver of daylight that they can slip away in. But what the new test does is it does away with primers. It recovers the whole genome, every base pair, so that then we can lay it down, all 3 billion, beside them and scale them out and measure them on a percentage basis, and we're going to win.
When we come back, we're going to Albuquerque, New Mexico, Cerritos, California, Knoxville, Tennessee, San Francisco, and other places on Coast to Coast AM. Lloyd, I got off the air on my last show at 2 in the morning, and then I had to catch a 7 a.m. flight from LAX to St. Louis. I fell asleep for a couple hours on the plane, and normally I don't do that. But I got to tell you, when you do that on a flight that's 3.5 hours long, it's like time traveling. You wake up and you go, wow, where? I'm almost here. It's amazing. Let's go to the phones. We'll go pick it up. First of all, we'll go to Albuquerque, New Mexico. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello there, George.
Welcome
good
to the show.
Good to talk to you. I just had a quick question. I was wondering about cloning. Is it possible to clone the star child and then figure out what it is from there?
Is there enough material to clone the star child, Lloyd?
Yes, there is. Whether or not they'll want to do it or not remains to be seen. But, yeah, there's plenty of DNA, so that certainly they they can do that if it gets to the point that they want to. Yeah.
If they ever got to the point where they would do some of those things, that would be an interesting possibility.
Right, yeah.
Would you be in favor of that if it were legal?
Boy, you know, that's a heck of a moral issue, isn't it?
Because it sure is.
What an individual you'd be bringing into the world. I don't really, that's a really, in the whole 10 years, I've been asked that, but nobody's ever really put it to me like, well, what would you do? You know, I'm glad I don't have to make that decision because it's very complex.
Well, and if it were truly an ET, is that fair to bring that kind of a child into the world?
That's exactly what I was saying without saying it, but that's it. It'd be the only one. Who'd want to go out with it, you know? I think it would be a miserable life, and so I just really don't know that would be a good thing to do.
We'll go to Terry now in Cerritos, California. Terry, you're up with Lloyd Pye.
Thank you. I wanted to ask you, I heard you earlier say that this is this 900 years old, give or take 40 years, and that it was found by his girl, a little girl, that found it in a mining shaft or a mining
tunnel.
Now, I the question I ask is, how old was the mining tunnel, and how is it that a little girl can stumble on it, but nobody else could stumble on it over the course of 900 years? Nobody had actually been in that mine for that long. What kind of mine was it? I mean, was it a modern mine?
Well, the story as it was told was that she was in an area where the villagers told, she was about 15, and it was her first time there, and the villagers said, we don't go into the mine tunnels and the caves in this area. It's a high desert area like northern Arizona. So, you know, those things are dangerous. And so they said, they're dangerous, they're taboo, we don't do it. Don't do it. So she's an American, she's a teenager, and boy, that's catnip. So she went as soon as she could. She snuck far away from the village to do some exploring, and she found one, and she wanted to go in and see what it was all about. And so,
yeah, my question is this. How old was how long, were they mining 1,000 years ago? And so that mine would have to be 1,000 years old. Nobody would have to have been in there to touch it.
Yeah, well,
and how did they get, that's the question. It couldn't have been a modern mine. And
there are mines in South Africa that go back, they say, a couple of million years, you know. I mean, we were talking about Michael Cremo, and there's plenty of evidence there of what are called ancient mines around the world. But also, too, you have the Incas, the Aztecs, the Mayas at 1,000 years ago. Those primitive cultures were already collecting gold, copper, and it's near the Copper Canyon area, so it could have been any of that.
Lloyd, you know, Zechariah's theories based on the Sumerian tablets that the Anunnaki came here to mine for gold, genetically made us, we were basically the workers, the slaves.
Right.
Are there any remnants of those mines of 200,000 years ago, apparently? Somewhere in South Africa,
they're older than that. They are very ancient mines in South Africa that the people there know about. I think there's some of that in Slave Species of God and other books and researchers in South Africa, but there's a lot of difficulty in getting certain information out. You know how the Kennewick Man, how they tried to squash it because of the Native Americans and their sensitivities? Well, you have that going on in South Africa. You have it going on in Australia with the Aborigines. You have it in New Zealand with the Maoris, where they try to keep the lid on things, that anything that makes it look like there was somebody there before them, they make it very difficult for archaeologists and anthropologists to deal with it. So, but those mines are there. Evidence of it is there. And Michael has some of that in his research.
Next up, we go to San Francisco. John is there floating around in a boat. Hey, John, where are you?
Yeah, I'm in the industrial city right now.
What kind of boat are you on?
35-foot sailboat.
Ah, perfect. I love sailing. Go ahead, John.
Well, I saw a live star child.
You saw one?
Yeah.
Where? When?
About 6 months ago at Lindemar Beach in Pacifica, California, about 10 miles south of San Francisco.
Just wandering around?
I got to tell you, it was amazing. And I knew right away it was the star child. I just paddled in from surfing and was putting away my surfboard, and I saw him. He was walking north, just on the beach, just strolling in a pair of jeans. He looked about 20 years old, was taller than 6 feet tall, had dark hair, and was white in complexion. And his eyes were about as big as the bottom of your standard bar glass. They were huge. And it was just obviously the star child. You know, his head had that round bevel on top and was just very abnormally large.
Let me bring you in on this, Lloyd, with John, in case you have some questions, Mr. Pye.
Well, the only question that I would have relative to a star child like our star child is that our star child, pretty sure it was around 4 feet tall, because the girl that found the two skeletons said that the human one, what turned out to be the human one, was, based on the size of its skull, about 5 feet tall. And she said that the other one, the strange one, was noticeably smaller. So we put that in the 4 foot range. So being over 6 feet tall, and you don't get that many people saying that grays are gray type aliens. Even the tall ones are 6 feet tall. You know, there's tall grays and there's short grays, and I don't think that the tall ones even go up that high. They might, but that's what it would have. You know, if that indeed is what he saw, I don't think it would necessarily be a star child with the kind we had. It might have been, you know, if it had eyes like that, if they weren't sunglasses, if he wasn't just seeing something, you know, interpreting something that was just sunglasses or an odd pair of sunglasses or something like that, then it could be that.
Knoxville, Tennessee, east of the Rockies. Al, as promised, you're up.
Okie dokie. Now, I won't tear with you guys time very often. I know you're busy and you've got other people to call. But I'll try to get a few comments and points in as quick as I can. And your distinguished guest again, his name is
Lloyd Pye, LLYDPYE.
That's all I need. I don't need any more.
All right.
Pye. Okay, and that Professor Pryor or Mr. Pryor or Instructor Pryor or
just Mr. Pye.
Okay, Mr. Pye. I think that essentially I jotted down 10 points because I knew I didn't want to hog your program. But in the last 5 reference minutes, I jotted down some points on the last.
All right, we'll buzz through them, Al.
Okie dokie, we'll make it quick. And then you can get a little comment. Okay. Number one, your distinguished guest, is, as far as I'm concerned, it's right on all points, 70 to, let's say, 80%.
All right.
We're not godlike, so we have a problem with being 100%. I think you can dig that. Okie dokie. On the last 5 minutes, mining carbon 14, forbidden straw. Oh yeah, Michael.
Come on, Al. We're going to lose you here. I'm going
to
get going.
I'm trying to get these.
How about a question?
Well, let me get my first one out of here as quick as I can.
Okay, but I don't want to go through 10 points. I mean, that's
okay,
half the show.
All right. Well, you just tell me when you're ready to go. Okay. I think that Michael, the archaeologist, is in general correct, basically. Gold lasts a long time in its normal state. And it's outlasted cultures, and cultures have gone through a lot of changes.
Okay, Al, I've got to run. I've got a lot of calls coming in, and we're talking about the star child, not gold. First-time caller, Daniel in Detroit, you're up with us. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, George. I love your show. How's it going?
Great. Life is good.
Good. Yeah, I just recently learned about the Anunnaki through an organization called the Nuwapia Nation, and they say that the Anunnaki was black. Is that true?
It does not seem to be. What seems to be true is that the first beings that the Anunnaki created, the Atamu, were, it's very likely, very strongly possible that they were black, that the first human beings were black, and I think our genes bear that out.
But, you know, Lloyd, you know, Egyptians can be construed as being black.
Right.
You know, I think not in ethnicity, but in terms of just the skin tone of ancient people, I think most of them were probably dark then.
Yeah, absolutely. But a lot of O2 were also living around the equator, so that was something that they needed to live down there anyway. But as far as the just the genetics of it, it looks, you know, that the oldest of us, based on our the mitochondrial studies that chart our history, say that the first of us were indeed of the Negroid race.
Is our skin tone makeup based on climate and location on this planet or something else?
That's a very good question. The whole thing about skin tone, about race, about the physical aspects of race, one of the biggest questions, one of the biggest mysteries, I think, in the whole of alternative knowledge, and one that nobody has a real good handle on, really.
So what I can't understand is, on this vast planet, why do we have so many different races? Why don't we just have, of human beings now, why don't we just have one? So how did we get so many different ones?
That's it. As I want to say that. That is a question that always stumps everybody, because there's really no good answer for that. There really is no good answer.
Most of us are probably imports. You know, there's probably one race on this planet, and then all the other ones were probably brought here.
Could very well be, and I have absolutely nothing against that, and that's certainly one of the potential answers, no question.
Tampa, Florida, Bill, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi there. I enjoy your show always, George.
Thank you, Bill.
I have a question. I have seen in several museums in Lima several skulls which look to be exactly the same as the pictures I have seen of the Star Child. I'd like to have Lloyd comment on that.
Well, actually, there really aren't any there that are exactly like the Star Child, to my knowledge, and I see most of them out there. There's nothing like the Star Child, but the cone heads, if that's what you're referring to, and that's really where the majority of them are in the museums of Peru and not just Lima. The cone heads, I think, are every bit as spectacularly bizarre as the Star Child and have a very good chance, in my opinion, of proving out to be not entirely human as well. And I've been saying for 10 years, somebody ought to DNA test those things, and so far as I know, nobody has. So it's just, I think that there are other bizarre skulls in the world, nothing like the Star Child, but I think the Coneheads are number two in that list of truly bizarre skulls.
What do you think of the crystal skulls? And you, of course, have touched the crystal skulls.
Yeah, I had a session with the Mitchell Hedges skull. I don't really think any of the others other than the Mitchell Hedges skull are that spectacular. They're interesting, but the Mitchell Hedges skull is otherworldly. I mean, it is at a level of perfection that humans can't match, like the pyramids or like any of the great megalithic structures around the world. The Mitchell Hedges crystal skull is that level of unusualness to where I don't think humans could have produced that. And so I think it's really very special and very spectacular.
We move now to Melbourne, Florida. Terry, it's your turn. Hi, Terry.
Hello, sir. Hey, how you doing? Hey, I was kind of curious about this Star Child, and would it be possible that this Star Child was a being that was left from a craft that actually left the planet, and that was the lone being here? Another thing, Mr. Pyle, is asking if you found any injuries on the skull that would have indicated a trauma.
No, not trauma in life. Now, the human that was found with it, she had a real severe concussion at some point in her life that had healed, so we have that on her. But the Star Child skull had never suffered any kind of blow like that. As far as what killed it, we don't know. As far as it being an alien from a craft that got stranded here, you know, you hear stories like that. Certainly it's a possibility. It could be. We just don't know. There's so many things that we don't know about it. We're just very lucky that we have what it takes to prove via this DNA test that I've talked about from 454 to prove that. But if you go to the website, which again is www.starchildproject.com, if you go to the website, there are plenty of pictures there, and it will allow you to see and compare, like the gentleman was saying, the cone heads or anything else, and you know, all you have to do is Google cone heads and you'll see plenty of those. And you know, but you'll be able to make your own comparisons and your own judgments. And really, that's all we're asking anybody to do is just take a look at the evidence. The evidence for the star child is just literally overwhelming. It truly is.
Let's go to Walter in Lafayette, Louisiana. Hey, Walter, take it away.
Hey, George. Hey, Lloyd. How you guys doing?
Okay,
doing fine.
First of all, George, thank you for the show and for all the wonderful work you do. I appreciate it. We all do. Thanks, man.
Sure.
Lloyd.
Yeah.
Thanks.
By the way, let me just say this before you ask your question. I'm from A-Meet, man.
All right, well, look, you actually came on my show or our show. We did Reality Check and Lafayette.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
And I'm one of the lucky few that got to touch the skull. That was awesome. Real quick question. I know you're tied up with the skull and everything else. I just reread Human Origins 1, and I'm dying for more of that, man. Are you working on anything new?
You know, I've tried so hard to be able to, and I'm glad you asked that. I've tried so hard to revise it and update it, but I just can't because of the press of business with Star Child. But I can say this. I've put it back in print. I took it out of print in 2007 because I thought I was going to do the update then. It's back in print. Anybody that wants to get Everything You Know Is Wrong, you can go to www.iuniverse.com, and there it is, iUniverse. You can go try Amazon, but I think they're still selling the used copies for like $50 to $100. Don't do that. Just get them from iUniverse if you want one, and there they are. It's a lot of people have gotten on me about letting it go out of print, so I finally just had to put it back.
It's really great, and it's a phenomenal book. Anybody out there who hasn't read it, you have to read this book.
Thank you very much. And really, I didn't set this up, George, I swear.
No, that's okay. And, Walter, you guys do a good job.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
You guys take care. I appreciate the information.
Sure thing. Yep. Absolutely. Minute or so to go. Lloyd, tell us about the website, the ebook again, please.
Yeah, the website is, again, www.starchildproject.com. Scroll down and you'll see a free offer, an offer of a free look at a sample of the book, of the ebook, and then click over to that and just make your decision. But I've got to get more people out there aware of what we're doing, what we're trying to do. We need help. We've got to get some help to find the right people with the money to help us get this done. But when we do, we're going to hit this one out of the park. I guarantee it.
And you're going to break it on Coast to Coast AM, right?
You can't do it anywhere else.
You got it. Lloyd, thank you so much for giving us these updates. This has been a fascinating subject since the beginning when I started talking to you back in my days in St. Louis.
Absolutely.
Everything You Know Is Wrong was his original book, and boy, it was a home run, and he continues to just do some remarkable things. Lloyd Pye on Coast to Coast AM.